And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Squad 51, it's an emergency! Actually, this is episode 51. It's still an emergency because the writers of the shows this week are missing their brains. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Rogues Gallery. Jason Hunt here in studio, and joining me online, Mr. Thomas Townley in Kingman, Kansas.
Greetings again.
And in Fort Worth, Texas, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Hello, hello.
And we're a little light this week, not only in terms of staff and participants here in the show, but also in the shows that we've watched this week, because there's not a Gotham on. Arrow was off this week. We had a Supergirl, we had a Flash. We had Legends Tomorrow, but I didn't get time to see it, and I did not see Powerless either. Let me pop my plosives on my peas. So
I saw everything but Powerless.
Okay, so Thomas, you are in the midst of writing a recap for Powerless this week. What can you tell us about it?
Well, this episode was called Cold Season. It turns out basically every summer the cold themed villains show up in Charmed City and basically freeze the town.
So, just so, because?
Yeah, all the cold themed villains, and they named like Mr. Freeze and all sorts of villains. The one you see in this episode is named Frostbite.
Frostbite. Have we heard of Frostbite? Is Frostbite an actual character, or they made him up for the show?
I think they made this one up. There is a Frostbite in DC Comics, in the DC Comics universe, who was in the Young Heroes in Love series.
Oh. But
that was a male person. This was a female.
Oh, okay. All right. So a legacy character.
Yeah.
So it really was Christmas in July.
yeah. And then, during this episode, Teddy came up with a new invention, which was a pair of powered gloves that would allow you to, say, unfreeze your car door with your hand, and would also be strong enough to heat up a cup of coffee.
Now that's something that we need to have in the box here at the studio.
Oh yeah, and so Emily thought that he should earn him in the Wayne Innovation Contest. And he was against it. It turns out when you push Teddy, he becomes kind of emo.
No,
and dark,
really?
and just a real jerk. Basically, the crux of the story is because his brother is a space doctor, an astronaut doctor, he feels inferior.
Hmm.
And then there was the B story was Van is dating a woman with a kid, and he kept having Ron put together kitty cars for the kid. So first it was a Superman car, but it turns out it was a girl. So we had him put together a Wonder Woman plane, an invisible plane, which was a great sight gag, or not sight gag, because you couldn't actually see it.
Right.
I don't know how he was putting together this plane.
Kind of like the invisible boatmobile on SpongeBob.
Yeah.
They always have that gag.
Oh, yeah. But everything turned all right. Basically, by the end of the episode, they're on the balcony. Crimson Fox flips onto the balcony and gets frozen by Frostbite. And so they use the pair of gloves to defrost her.
Okay.
And then she goes off and defeats the cold villains, ending cold season.
So would you say it's a serviceable episode, or was it actually one that worked really well? What do you think?
It was a pretty serviceable episode. It was kind of jam packed from my view. They even had transitions.
Oh,
like the Wayne Tech logo would pop up and then go to the next scene.
Huh. So kind of like the old Batman 66.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Interesting.
That's cool.
So, okay, so I know you had made a note a few weeks ago about the fact that these episodes are not airing in order. Did this one feel, this one originally was where in the sequence?
Let's see, I'm not quite sure where this one was exactly in the sequence. It did seem like it should it should be in the regular order.
Okay. All right. So it didn't feel out of place.
No, it didn't feel entirely out of place. Before. It felt like you were going backwards.
Well, that's good.
Too far. But, so yeah, it's a good episode.
Okay. All right, well, we will look forward to your recap.
I looked up Frostbite,
uh-huh.
And she is a part of the crime syndicate and the conglomerate, and she's only appeared in Justice League Quarterly Issue 8, and she lives in the Antimatter universe.
Ah, so that's where we got her from.
They're digging deep. I mean, that's...
The other Frostbite was a guy.
Yeah.
Right.
On New Earth.
Wow. That's interesting that they're going that deep into the bench for villains.
Little bit of good news. The ratings have pretty much evened out on the show.
Well, that's good.
They've been for the past four weeks above 2. This one was about 2.38.
That's improvement.
Yeah.
That's good.
The 2 weeks ago, it was down to 2.27. That's the season low.
Well, on what's essentially a workplace comedy, but it's set in the DC Comics universe, mm-hmm. I would guess... Well, I don't know. Could we compare it to the first season of The Office and see what the numbers were there? I wonder how they would compare, because essentially this is The Office with capes. So
and Alan Tudyk's basically playing Michael Scott.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I'm wondering how they would compare to those. If you put those first seasons side by side to compare the numbers, what that would look like.
Well, the first season of The Office, it looks like it started out at 11.2 million and ended the season on 4.8 million. But that was just 6 episodes.
And we're how many viewers?
We're
about 2.3 is.
We're averaging around 2.5 million for Powerless.
Oh, so you were saying 2.5 million viewers, not 2.3 as a rating.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Something like that.
Well.
So, yeah.
Still, well, I don't know. See, on a network show, see, nowadays, though, it's really hard to tell because things are so segmented now.
But The Office really didn't hit its stride until season 2 or 3.
Yeah. And I think NBC's committed enough to this show that it's gonna pan out. Hopefully this will be the first series that I'll have covered that will actually make it to a second season.
Woo!
Zorn doesn't look like it's going to make it to season 2. So.
Oh, it doesn't?
I don't know. It's kind of on the fence.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who watches it.
Well, now, see, Son of Zorn, though, it's one of those shows, kind of like, I guess, maybe like The Last Man on Earth. You have to want to watch the show for whatever reason is in the show. No Tomorrow over on the CW would be another one like that, where it's such an off the wall premise that. Unless you start watching it at the very beginning, I don't know that you'd pick up any. Just simply because the way the story is progressing, you can't jump in the middle. You'd have to binge watch to catch up just to know what was going on because of the way the stories are structured. And I think Son of Zorn might be the same kind of thing where, you know, the numbers were pretty steady though on that, weren't they?
Yeah, well,
up and down, or do they say, I mean, they were low, but were they consistent?
They were pretty consistent, although they were starting to edge downward, especially as it kept getting interrupted by football and, you know,
football
things like that, getting on and off and on and off. I think that really hurt the show.
Well, it killed Firefly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, although NBC doesn't strike me as the type that would, I don't want to say they wouldn't deliberately kill the show. No, they're not NBC. Son of Zorn is on Fox, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
and
we're not going to get it. Won't be a,
things.
It won't be a second series, a second season probably.
NBC will stick with it because, well, what else do they have? They're trying to regrow their network.
Well, yeah, they want to do they want must-see TV back on Thursday nights.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, I would think that if they cancel Powerless, then they join CBS in being the only networks that don't have a superhero show. Because right now, CBS is the only one. CBS got rid of Supergirl, and so they don't have a superhero show. Fox has got Lucifer, not a superhero show, but it's based on a comic book. And then you've got the X-Men show that starts shooting in Dallas in a couple of weeks. That's going to pilot. That hasn't gotten picked up for a series yet, but it's down there shooting next couple of weeks down there, and that's going to Fox. You've got all of the shows that are on the CW. You've got the shows that are on Netflix. You've got...
You have Once Upon a Time on ABC.
Once Upon a Time on ABC. Yeah. You've got Cloak and Dagger that's going to start shooting in New Orleans. That's going to go to Freeform. And Freeform also already has Shadowhunters. And
Legion is on FX.
Legion's on FX. Shannara Chronicles is on MTV. MTV's got Teen Wolf, at least for now. You know,
Nickelodeon has Power Rangers.
Yeah, so I mean, there's superheroes everywhere except CBS, and I don't think NBC wants to be in that room.
No,
does MacGyver count as a superhero? Because that's what CBS has.
I know MacGyver. No, and MacGyver doesn't count as MacGyver either. Sorry, no.
That's,
it has Lucas Till from X-Men in it.
That's not MacGyver.
I know.
It's not that bad.
I don't know.
It's entertaining.
I saw the early promos for it, and I just kind of, you know, I cocker spanieled a little bit and tilted my head sideways and went, huh? Because it was such an off-the-wall reboot of MacGyver. And it doesn't look a thing like the original show, and the premise even, you know, the description of the show doesn't even look like anything that Richard Dean Anderson did. So
yeah.
They're capitalizing on the name without doing any of the rest of anything. So kind of makes you wonder what Knight Rider is going to look like when it comes back to YouTube, Machinima.
Well, MacGyver's crossing over with Hawaii Five-0 tonight.
Of course he is.
They're having their crossover event.
Do you remember? Now, I don't. Okay, so I'm going to be the old man in the room for a minute. Back in the day, and I don't know if you guys are going to remember this or not, CBS especially, CBS used to be the network where shows crossed over all the time.
Yeah.
I remember one in particular because at one point you had Magnum P.I., and Simon and Simon were on back-to-back on Friday night, Thursday night, Friday night.
Yeah.
One of those nights. So you had Magnum P.I. and then Simon and Simon were on. And I remember they did a crossover between those two shows. And I think on either the same season or a different season, Magnum P.I. crossed over with Murder, She Wrote. I kid you not. It was one of the – I was
wow.
Like, oh, this is interesting. We'll see, because it was all on CBS. And so they could do this kind of thing. This is one of those things where they could just cross over whichever shows they wanted to do. And since all of these were detective mystery shows, why not? You know. And I remember at the time this was the thing, because your soap operas, you know, Dallas and Knott's Landing, those would cross over every now and again because Knott's Landing was a spinoff of Dallas. So they were in the same universe. And I think we've gotten away from the shared universe idea, the crossover idea, until now we've got the CW shows doing it now again with all of the Arrowverse, Flareoverse, Berlantiverse, whatever you want to call it, shows that are now on CW, and Black Lightning is going to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where now it's an event. It's a big thing now for all these shows to cross over. And when I was younger, it was, oh, they're doing a crossover. Okay. You know, it wasn't that much of a surprise when they did it, because they did it a lot more often than they do now. So,
oh, yeah.
Speaking of Flash and Supergirl, the big musical crossover looks to be happening very soon.
Yeah.
And that's in what, 2 weeks? The 21st?
21st is 2 weeks, yeah.
Will it redeem either show?
It depends on next week's episode.
Because right now, I am grumpy old Manning at both of those shows. I just have had my fill of both of those writers' staff sitting there saying, how stupid can we make everybody this week? And I made the observation earlier. I'm looking at all of the angsty soap opera and both shows. And Flash almost is worse than Supergirl with this, in that it is quickly devolving into a CW show of the 90s. This is becoming Dawson's Creek with a cape.
Yeah. Well, this, it seems like both of these shows are starting to have more drama in it than Supernatural does. And Supernatural gets pretty complicated and drama-filled. Yeah. But Supernatural, they still kick butt and fight monsters single episode.
Guys, that's enough with the whiny-whiny. Let's punch something.
I am tired of them just standing around talking. Can we just punch something or run fast lasers?
See, the thing is, and I was reading, I think it was IGN maybe, I think, was where I saw this, was a review of this episode of The Flash. And the complaint is that Barry still has not learned his lesson when it comes to keeping secrets from everyone in order to, quote-unquote, protect them, right? And so now you've got not telling Iris why he's asking her to marry him. You've got Wally not telling anybody that he's seeing Savitar. He's having visions of Savitar. And Caitlin not telling anybody that she's happens to have a piece of the Philosopher's Stone still. You know, all of these different things, all of these different decisions and it's even in the show, they even lampshade it, all of these decisions that are made because of fear. You know, Barry is making very, very stupid decisions based on fear.
They
Wally
would stink as Green Lanterns.
Oh,
all of them would just buckle under the yellow lanterns.
Well, see, and this is not Barry Allen from the comic books.
No.
Barry Allen from the comic books is smarter than this, and he's got it together more than this. Even when he was, you know, even before he married Iris, all of this time, Barry Allen has always been more stable, more steady, not... He's not driven by a fear of what's going to happen next. And I think the writers are using that as a crutch. The Flashpoint was a gimmick that really had potential. I mean, you could have done an entire season in Flashpoint.
It would have been awesome.
Or at least half a season or something there where you could just really, really drive this thing off the rails. Because that's what Flashpoint did. Flashpoint ruined everything. And, you know, they're still...
the animated movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got that, but, you know, you've got a whole line of the animated films from that. But also, Flashpoint gave us the New 52, which was a train wreck for DC. They're still recovering from that. Thankfully, we've got Rebirth that's trying to reset a lot of the universe back to the way it's supposed to be. But Flashpoint, as far as a TV series episode, you know, one episode, two episodes, that's not enough. If you're going to do something crazy like Flashpoint and you're going to change everything because Barry saved his mom, let's see the repercussions of that. If he's been living with his parents there alive for 3 months, where is all of that? Why are we picking this up in C2 and then suddenly he realizes he's got to go back and fix it all because he broke it? Let's do a season.
Did there have to be a reason why he proposed to Iris? Couldn't he have just left it like because he loved her? Did it have to be, oh no, Savitar attacked her and she wasn't wearing her ring?
Well,
that's why he needed to propose.
That's Wally figuring that out.
Yeah, I know, but did we have to have a subtext?
Yes.
About why Barry proposed?
Yes, because the entire episode is about each of these characters doing something incredibly stupid because they are afraid of something. Barry makes that decision. Wally makes the decision that he makes. Caitlin's got her thing. Everybody has got this thing. And that reminds me, it doesn't really remind me, but I just had this thought pop into my head. So when Wally decides that he's going to take the piece of the Philosopher's Stone, he's going to go throw it into the thing. Jesse shows up at Star Labs. Whoosh, and she comes in. She's not in her speedster outfit.
No.
And it struck me this week. It hit me in the middle of doing nothing. When did being a speedster stop burning the clothes? Because in the first season, Barry's clothes caught fire.
Yeah.
And whenever it was that, was it last season? Felicity's clothes caught fire. Remember? Because he brought her back and her shirt caught fire and everybody thought, oh, this is kind of cute. We get Felicity's shirt off of her. Let's burn it. You right? When did that stop being a thing?
Earth 2 clothes have different dynamics.
It's the new miracle fabric from DuPont.
Is it got Smile X in it or something? You know, Brand X. What's it suddenly? I mean, that's a continuity thing. You know, you can't. Or did I miss that Cisco came up with some sort of a chemical treatment that would keep clothes from burning from the Speed Force?
He definitely did not do that.
See, it was just a little niggling thing, but it was one of those things where she shows up and she's looking very stylish, but her clothes should be on fire. Or at least smoking. And I guess it was kind of like when the Stargate thing, because in the beginning of Stargate, in the first few episodes especially, that carried over the idea from the movie that once you went through the Stargate, you came out the other side and you were ice cold. And that went away fairly quickly after the show picked up steam. But I don't know. It's just one of those little weird things that just kind of pops in and I realize, hey, wait a minute. Hang on. You know, but, you know, don't stare too closely at the comic book show, right?
And isn't that what we're all about?
Yeah,
but you know, you want to be able to enjoy it a little bit, and I haven't been enjoying these shows lately.
I want to see people run around and make tornadoes with their speed and stop the Mirror Master or the Weather Wizard or somebody. Come on now.
Well, now we are going to get the final entry into the original Flash Rogues Gallery with Abracadabra. He's going to show up here in a couple of 2-3 weeks. So maybe. But see, again, with the time travel.
But, okay, so they've been teasing Captain Cold for, like, weeks now. And we've been hearing his voice in the previews.
Mm-hmm.
Is he ever going to show back up in the episode?
Who knows? I would imagine...
Because he was cast as a season regular, right?
Yeah, he was, and so was Katie Cassidy. And I haven't seen either one of them as a regular on anything.
Yep. So, I've seen John Barrowman as a regular on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that one out, because a regular, that particular word in casting has meaning, and we're not seeing Katie Cassidy or Wentworth Miller as regulars. So I don't know. Now,
or at all.
Now, the other thing, let me get to this last bit on Flash, the theory of Savitar. You guys got a theory on who is under the mask? Because I know who's under the mask.
Is it Max Mercury or something?
No.
Okay. Well, that was the only speedster I could come up with at the moment.
Well, the Accelerated Man is also out there, because we saw him talking with Gypsy last week. But I have a very specific theory about who Savitar is.
Is it one of Barry and Lyris's kids or something?
No. No, it was right there in front of you the entire episode this time around.
Is it future Barry?
No. No, because Savitar says, I'm the future Flash. And some people think that he's saying, I'm the future, comma, Flash. But he's not saying that. He's saying, I'm your future Flash. Which means he's the next Flash. No, he's Wally. Wally gets sucked in and Savitar comes out. And all of that's my theory anyway, that Wally, that was the beginning of Wally getting trapped in the Speed Force, and he goes nuts, and he becomes Savitar, and he comes back out. He's just traded places with himself. I think Wally is Savitar. We'll see if I'm right. I'm not. Because
what
that's
say you, Thomas?
So obvious that it's probably wrong.
I like this theory. I'll go with this theory. Yeah.
It's wibbly wobbly timey wimey enough to work.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the Flash. You know, so time travel is almost like a have to thing, even though they said we're not gonna do time travel anymore. But you know, future.
Oh, you know who it could be? It could be John Wesley Shipp again. As a third character.
Oh, it makes my brain hurt. I'm still waiting for the Earth 3 episode, guys. Berlanti, come on. You're letting me down.
I would
here.
Love that.
That's what I want to see. Have all of them back. All right, so Supergirl. Do we want to talk about Supergirl? We want to go. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about Supergirl. You guys watch Legends of Tomorrow this week?
Yes.
No.
Okay. So when we get back, we'll talk about Supergirl. Jeff can talk about Legends of Tomorrow, and then we've got a little bit of movie rumor we will get to when the Rogues Gallery continues right after this.
If you unsubscribe to our podcasts, our legion is doomed.
If you're like a lot of fans, you enjoy reading the books, watching the movies, and TV shows. But you also like to go inside the process, which is why we go one-on-one with filmmakers, writers, artists, authors, musicians, and actors about their work. Movies, books, television, video games, comics, and more. It's a half-hour chat where we ask the questions you want answered. Not your typical 30-second soundbite. It's a conversation on a different level. Live from the bunker. New episodes every month right here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention this weekend, especially if you're a cosplayer, it helps to know what the weather's going to be like. Rain and fur don't mix very well now, do they? That's why every week Sci-Fi for Me gives you the weather forecast for every city hosting a convention. Those we have on our list anyway. And that's worldwide, not just in the United States. It's part of our commitment to bring you content you won't find anywhere else. Just click on the conventions tab over at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Jedi, Sith, Tauntauns, No matter which side of the Force you claim, we are your go-to holocron for all the latest Star Wars news, rumors, and innuendo. Imperial Intelligence has got nothing on us. We've got your salacious crumbs every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Central U.S. exclusively on Sci-Fi For Me TV.
SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse. And may the Force be with you.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
If you're into video games, be sure to download the 8-Bits podcast every fourth Tuesday of the month right here on Sci-Fi For Me Radio.
Back at the Rogues Gallery, if you want to be part of the conversation, you can send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com. And just a real quick programming note, for those of you who listen on iTunes or any of the other player apps like Stitcher or Pocket Cast or Double Twist or anything like that, this past week we have had issues with our hosting service for our shows. In the future, if an episode disappears or if something happens where we're not able to upload episodes or some sort of a something somewhere happens, we are going to make it a point to get the episode at least on our site. So if you don't find it, you know, if something happens and we don't hit our schedule and you can't find it anywhere, you can always find it at scififorme.com. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody had that information, because we have run into that this week with a couple of episodes of different podcasts disappearing. So that programming note. Okay, so now on to Lois and Hercules, The Adventures of Supergirl.
Yep. They were there for 30 seconds.
And it was the best 30 seconds of the entire show.
Yes, it was.
I'm sorry. It's just one of those things. I'm just sitting there thinking, why are we doing this to this show?
And in case you haven't figured out that Mon-El is the Prince of Daxam,
yeah,
they even spoil it in the promo for the next episode. So,
well, it's kind of like the best kept secret that everybody watching the show already knows. So it's not like it's any kind of a major reveal here now. But let me ask you this question, guys. If you run a secret paramilitary scientific organization like Cadmus, mm-hmm, and I know we all have experience doing this, so, you know, how do you hide that big of a spaceship from everybody?
You could do like they did in Batman versus Superman and just have a big tarp over it.
But I mean, it didn't even have a tarp over it. I was like, wait a minute, because it didn't look big enough to be, it didn't look big enough to fit inside the building, for one. Mm-hmm. Two, if you're doing any kind of work on it at a Luther facility that's supposed to have been shut down for, what they said, 10 years?
Yeah.
How do you hide that?
Shouldn't there be some, like, kids riding a bike around the town or something?
Well, I mean, even if it's nothing so much, I mean, as we've learned this week, the government intelligence agencies are gathering information all the time from everything, right? I mean, your TV will spy on you, your phone will spy on you, your coffee mug will spy on you, practically. And, of course, there are satellites, communication satellites, and satellites with cameras and all of that that orbit the planet all the time. And those cameras are actually pointed to the planet. They're not pointed outward. They're pointed at the planet so they can see what's going on on the planet. And, you know, I was just looking at a satellite map the other day because I have a new client coming on for a TV commercial production. And so I wanted to see which direction the building faces, so I'd know, you know, for sunlight, if I want to do a morning or an afternoon shoot, right? Because of sun and shadows and all that. I could actually go into the magic of Google, and I can get on a satellite picture, and I can go zoom down into the building and see how which direction the building faces. And I'm thinking to myself, self, how do you hide a spaceship that big? With all of the technology that we have for seeing stuff like this, I mean,
maybe the Google Street cars haven't caught up with that part yet.
I don't know, but I'm like, no, this is the USS Hand of the Writer here.
Gigantic invisible cloak.
I don't know, yeah. Man. I'm like,
There could be neurotoxins in the air around it that make everybody not see it, make it think it's like a decrepit old building or something.
I don't know. I just couldn't get past that. I'm like, wait a minute. That ship is how big? And they're putting how many people on it? And they've rounded up those people. How long did it take? You know, and they're rounding it. I don't know. I just it made my brain hurt this week.
Okay, so another thing about Cadmus is when Jeremiah and Alex just waltz right in there,
uh-huh,
all willy nilly.
Yeah,
and okay, I get Jeremiah works for them, but Alex is like your sworn enemy.
Well, and not only that, but she walks in, she beats the tar out of three people, and then, you know, they've got guns aimed at her, and he goes, that's okay, she's with me. It's like, no, she just took out three of your people. How is she with you?
Yeah, and then they, like, lower the guns.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, you know, this becomes the Alex and Jeremiah show this week. Now, I will say, the one line that I loved out of the entire episode was when, what's her name? Luther. Mommy Luther.
Yeah, looks, Mom Luther.
What's her name?
L something?
It's an L. It's, yeah, what is it? I don't know. What's Lena Luther's mother's name? Lena, it's not Lena, it's Mom. Anyway, Mom Luther. So Mom Luther looks over at Jeremiah, Dean Cain, and says, you're the only Superman we need. And she walks off, and I thought, that was just perfect. Clever. Very clever. Couldn't stand the rest of the episode, but that one line almost saved it. But yeah, it's... Okay.
Also, if Wynn got his girlfriend taken away, why wasn't he a bigger part of trying to rescue her?
Exactly. Well, and the other thing, too, you know, this whole thing with Alex being emotionally compromised and whatnot. Okay, when I was growing up watching television, you'd watch the TV shows, you know, the detective shows and the cop shows and all of these different places where if someone, an agent, somebody with a badge was emotionally compromised, you're too close to the case, right? So they get taken off the case, and they hem and they haw and they stew, and they, you know, it's all that, right? Well, at the end of the episode, when everything works out, everything's hunky dunky again, and the bad guys lose, the good guys win, and you've been off the case, but now you're reinstated and you're back on the case, right? Well, the boss that took them off the case doesn't apologize and say, "I was wrong," because if you're emotionally compromised and you're too close to the case and the boss takes you off, then the boss is right. And, you know, for John to take Alex off the case, that's a practical, smart HR move. That's something that is probably in any situation like that, you know, that's going to happen. That is the right procedure. That's the right protocol. Right. And then for him to sit there and apologize to Alex at the end of it just really felt wrong to me. And not so much that it's the hand of the writer, but it made me realize where we are as a society now, because this really felt like one of those meta moments that take us out. It really kicked me out of the show, and I thought, where are we now that we feel like, because this show has done this before earlier with Jimmy trying to explain to Kara his decision to run a story. I'm like, wait a minute, no. The boss doesn't have to explain anything to the employee. And this is the exact same thing. This is Jean apologizing to his subordinate for doing something that actually is the right thing that he's supposed to do in his job. And...
Well, now did he more apologize for the means of how he got her, of how he figured that out, like transforming into Jeremiah?
No, he said I shouldn't have taken you off the case because Alex went in and did it anyway. I mean,
well, that's dumb.
You know, everything in this show, in this episode, was Alex breaking the rules, and Alex doesn't get disciplined. At the end of the episode, Alex gets her badge back. She reports back to work. Everything's fine, hunky dunky, because the good guys win. Ends justify the means. And real life is not like that. And the story falls apart for me like that. That kicks me out of the show completely when the boss sits there and says, I'm sorry, I did what my job insists that I do.
Well, we have one good boss on the show, and that's Snapper, because he fired Kara.
Absolutely.
And he was like, look, you don't have enough credible sources, and you can't tell me exactly where you're getting this information. I can't publish this.
You know, if I actually think, well.
And then she started a blog.
I know. I can't. Oh, yeah. I could. Oh, I can't, because it's politics. And we're not politics on this show. Oh.
No.
But okay. All right. I'm going to break my own rule. I'm going to break my own rule here just for a brief moment, okay? I'm going to be curmudgeonly, and I'm just going to break my own rule. If more journalists took the attitude, had the same point of view, the same priorities that Snapper Carr, a fictional character, has about journalism, just in general, I think the state of journalism would probably be a little better than where it is now. I'll go that far and say I'm not going to call names or call anybody out, but I'm just going to say, you know, because in this whole swirling miasma of fake news and whatever nonsense, you lose sight of the fact that reporters. And up until a few years ago, they were called reporters. They weren't journalists. They were reporters. You report the facts. Here's what happened. Here's who did it. I don't need your opinion about what who did. You just tell me what happened. And a lot of people, a lot of journalists lose sight of that. And for Supergirl to sit there and for Snapper to call her on the carpet for it was very refreshing for me. And I thought... This scene, play this scene at the Columbia School of Journalism for everybody about to graduate. All right, I'm done pontificating.
So he's a good boss. He was the better boss in this episode. And Kara lost her job, and Alex keeps her job because she did wrong, and Kara thought she was doing right, but she did wrong, and she lost her job. But Alex does wrong, and she keeps her job.
Yes. So the moral of the story is don't work for Snapper Carr.
Or work for John Jones. He'll give you all the chances.
I don't know. Thomas, what do you think? Am I off the mark here? Or is this? What did you think of the episode?
Well, I really didn't see the episode, but from what you're telling me, yeah, he's probably right for firing her. I mean, that was insubordination.
Oh, absolutely. Well, not only that, but you know, again, you go back to the whole idea of the journalism. Snapper's right. You've got to have more than one source. You've got to have a way of verifying the information that you've got, because otherwise you start putting a bunch of stuff out there that turns out not to be true. You can't take that back.
Yeah.
Well, and then she says, well, her main source is Supergirl. So he sets up an interview with Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks Supergirl questions. And he says, Supergirl, how do you know this to be true? And she says, well, because I saw it and stuff like that. And he says, well, what makes you so trustworthy? Like, how am I going to note you as a trustworthy source to the public, you know?
Exactly.
That's when that's when she should say, ask my cousin. Because everyone believes Superman. Superman says it, they'll believe it in an instant.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is, though, Snapper's got a point. Even if Supergirl is telling everything exactly true and Snapper believes her, if you're a responsible journalist, you still have to have a corroborating second source in order for the story to be something that you can actually print.
Plus, this is a comic book story. She could be affected by red kryptonite.
I got it. This episode needed Wonder Woman. We need the lasso.
the lasso of truth. Yeah.
At first, I thought you were talking about President Wonder Woman, who we haven't seen come back.
No, we haven't yet. No.
Alien.
Yeah, that's a thread that hasn't been picked up yet. I expect probably maybe after the arc with Kevin Sorbo and Terry Hatcher, which we're about to get into now, maybe at some point, maybe toward the end of the season, maybe Linda Carter shows up again. I don't know.
Do we know Wynn's girlfriend's name? Because they say it, but I keep forgetting it.
Lyra of Starhaven. Okay. Starhaven, I think.
Well, they're cute. Mm-hmm. I like them. That's one of the relationships I can stand on this show.
Yeah, really. Yeah, they are cute. And it's fun to see Wynn actually finally getting a relationship, you know, being able to do all of that cutesy dating stuff. I'm already sick of Kara and Mon-El.
Yep.
Because it's a hand of the writer relationship because of what's about to happen next.
Oh, but did you see the promo?
I did not.
It said something about Prince of Daxum, and then she goes, well, this just changes everything.
Oh, no. Did it really?
Maybe it's just an editing choice or whatnot. But they say the Prince of Daxum is here or like something, and it reveals he's the Prince of Daxum, and she just goes, well, this just changes everything.
Did I not say Dawson's Creek?
I was like, no, Karen, no, don't say that.
CW of the 90s, they are doing that again. Why are they doing that? I know it's Greg Berlanti, but still.
Okay. After Powerless, I switch over to the CW, and I end up watching the last 5 minutes of Riverdale.
Yeah.
That is god-awful melodrama.
Oh,
Please do not say this is all turning into god-awful melodrama.
I think Riverdale started that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is he...
But the thing is people are having fun with Riverdale. We're not having fun.
No, we're not enjoying this at all.
There's no laser vision or freeze breath or people punch. Well, there's John Cyborg Superman punching Jeremiah, but...
Well,
and Alex uses her ray gun for finally.
Well, and no, Maggie used it.
Oh, yeah.
Maggie used the ray gun, and she's like, hey, I see why you like this thing. I'm like, really? Really?
Because she lost at pool.
Yeah, well, see, because... And the whole Alex-Maggie thing. I mean, okay, so Maggie gets shut down. Alex gets shut down by Jean. Kara comes to visit her sister and says, well, Jean's kind of got a point. You're emotionally compromised. And Alex is like, really? Are you kidding me? You're not even going to stand up for me? And she turns around and says to Maggie, says, you probably think that I'm wrong too. And Maggie's like, no, of course not. You're my girlfriend. I'm gonna agree with you no matter what. I was like, wait a minute. Maggie's a cop. Maggie has a badge and a gun. She knows all about protocol and procedures, and she's probably been in this exact same kind of situation before herself. And she's going to throw all of that rational thought away because her girlfriend wants to go save Daddy. The believability of this particular episode just completely flew out the window for me.
Because also, the believability of her moving that spaceship whenever she was so weak in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And cooling it down super fast whenever it was burning into reentry.
I know. It's All right, Jeff, tell us about Legends of Tomorrow, because I'm just about...
Okay, this is a mind trip, if you will.
Okay.
Because Sarah and Jax decide that they're going to go into Rip Hunter's mind so they can free Rip Hunter and undo all the psycho babble that... the Legion of Doom did.
Okay.
And so they get there and they encounter evil versions of everybody.
Ooh.
Which, for the evil version of Heatwave, it's still Heatwave. he just has his Time Lord mask on. Oh, sorry, not Time Lord.
His Kronos mask.
Yeah, his Kronos mask. He just has that on. And he has his flamethrower. And so his mind is laid out like the ship. So they know how to maneuver the ship.
Right.
AKA his mind. The subplot is the ship gets stranded way far back in the Cretaceous period where they left the Atom whenever they all got split up.
Uh-huh, right.
And so Steel and Vixen and Adam, they all go out and try to find the time MacGuffin for the episode. I don't remember the name of it, but it's a piece of the time ship that broke off and they need to fix it and put it back on so they can go back and travel the time stream.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
So they're doing all that, and the ships on this show, the relationships, Vixen and Steel kiss, and they're all flirty, and Adam is like, look, you can't go back in time and live with her, and she can't come to the present day, because she has a granddaughter who she gives the necklace to become the present day Vixen, and you'll mess up the time stream so you can't have this relationship. And they're like, well, he says, we're going to do it anyway. he doesn't really say that, but he keeps kissing her.
It's like everybody takes a stupid pill.
Yeah. So Heatwave and Stein are monitoring everybody who's in Rip's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah and Jax have these shock buttons so they can shock themselves awake, because they can only stay in for an hour or a little bit longer, or else they're trapped forever.
Okay, sure. Ticking clock. Okay.
Yeah. And so... So Jax is maneuvering the ship, and Sarah goes to also. So they split up, which is a good thing to do when you're trapped in a foreign location with bad versions of yourself trying to find you, you know?
Of course.
So she finds Rip, and he thinks that it's evil Sarah, so he doesn't want to believe her. That he's Rip Hunter and that he's a good guy and that he's the captain of the ship. Oh, and Sarah, after she defeats herself, finds this lady, and she has a very familiar voice. And we come to realize the lady is Gideon.
Oh?
There's a human form of Gideon, and she's a very attractive lady. Gideon even says, "Oh, you didn't expect me to have a physical form?" "No, I didn't." Sarah says, "No, I didn't expect you to be hot."
Oh, man.
So Rip realizes that he can push people with the force powers. He has force push because it's his mind.
Right.
And he's the only one who can permanently kill the bad versions of the other people in his mind.
So if I'm understanding it right, the bad versions of the crew are what's complicating him from actually being restored into himself. Is that how I'm hearing it? Okay.
Yes.
So then they
imprisoned him.
In
a thing.
Okay. So good.
And so he
so good
breaks
rip,
out with his
gotcha.
Force powers.
Gotcha. Okay. So what'd you think of it? I mean, execution wise is good. It's an interesting premise that they're using that kind of thing.
It was a very interesting premise, and I liked that fact that he had to overcome, he had to believe in himself to become the captain again, because we've been seeing Rip just so beat down and distraught lately.
Mm-hmm.
It was good to see the captain finally emerge in himself and come back. And that's the thing, is once he started to regain his memories and take control back, the ship in his mind started to crumble and dissipate and break. Because the ship part of his mind was only what was constructed by him to protect, to make him think that new way, that evil way.
Oh, I gotcha. All right.
Because once the ship is broken, he's free. And so so Jax gets out just fine. But Sarah's button is broken. And so she can't get out. So she may be trapped in Rip's mind forever.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, which is resolved in 30 seconds.
Oh.
Because they say, "Oh, we need an electric shock." And Jax takes the defibrillators and just bolts Sarah back to life. Even though Stein says, "No, you'll kill her." But she just bolts back to life and she goes, "Okay, I'm back." And then Gideon and Rip kiss in the middle of while everything's blowing up around them and the ship is crumbling apart. And they kiss.
Oh, okay.
And she's like, "I've always been there for you, Captain." And he's like, "I know."
Oh, young love.
Yeah. Yeah, and so then he comes back, and he puts on his Rip Hunter outfit, and he's all Rip Hunter-y again. And then...
Rip Hunter-y is
they
the,
get him,
the new...
And the guys in the Jurassic Age, or the Cretaceous Age... They keep talking about this dinosaur named Gertrude. And we don't see her. And we don't see her. And we don't see her. And then we get this CGI shot that looks like it's from a CD-ROM from the 90s.
Oh, man.
And she walks out of the trees.
And she has the piece in the ship.
And Vixen goes. And she's mad. And so Vixen goes up to her. And she puts her hand on the T-Rex's mouth, and then she becomes a T-Rex in her totem.
Uh-huh.
And she communicates with the T-Rex. And then the T-Rex leaves.
I'm assuming they found the piece of the ship that was broken and they got it all put back together and now they're back in the time travel, right?
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
But the thing was they had to go into the nest to get the timepiece because the dinosaur thought it was an egg, but it wasn't. It was the timepiece.
Of course.
Of course.
Yeah. classic time travel dinosaur shenanigans.
Of course, yes.
Overall, it was a nice episode. I still like the Lancelot Camelot episode better, but...
Sure. Well, you know...
This was a serviceable episode.
Camelot is always fun, because you can do so many things with the Knights of the Round Table and King Arthur and Merlin and Excalibur and all those things, because there's such a cultural component to that where... You know, dinosaurs are fun, but dinosaurs are fun for a certain group of people. Whereas, you know, the Camelot thing that has a broader appeal, and there's more that people can do with it. All right, so no episode.
Oh,
of Arrow
and
an interesting
thought was Martin didn't show up in Rip's mind. Martin Stein didn't show up in Rip's mind as an evil person.
Huh.
But Jax did. And Jax could become Firestorm all by himself.
Interesting. I wonder why they did it that way.
Dark version of Firestorm.
Yeah.
And then in the real timeline, or in the real part of the ship, Rory and Stein are talking, and he's like, "Yeah, I fear I don't have much time left," or whatever. And he's like, "I'm getting old," and I guess they're hinting at him maybe trying to retire, or
I wonder if there's a possibility. Because we know that Robbie Amell is coming back at some point, so I don't know. I wonder if that could be that maybe Stein comes out of the Firestorm Matrix and Jax and Ronnie Raymond become the new Firestorm for a while, because I think weren't they together in the Matrix for New 52?
Yeah, they were together, and then the three
Jax, it was Jason Rush, but Jax is essentially Jason Rush in the show.
Yeah. They were together, and then the three of them were together.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that's where they're possibly headed for this. It's a theory anyway. All right, so if you have a theory that you'd like to share with us, or you've got comments or thoughts that you'd want to throw our way, you can send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com. You can also leave comments on all of the social media, and we do read all of the comments and all of the notes and everything that people send to us when we get them. So, feel free to share your thoughts, your ideas, your complaints, the things that you like, things you don't like about any of the DC shows, what you're looking forward to the rest of the season, as well as Black Lightning, which is waiting in the wings. In the meantime, Army Hammer has continued to tease the whole Green Lantern thing. We have not got any kind of official anything about him playing Hal Jordan, but he's trolling the net, putting out all of these different images of him in the Green Lantern suit. So I'm going to say he's probably not playing Green Lantern. But who knows? But we'll keep an eye on that. And we will be back next week with some more discussion of some different shows. I think we're thinning out, because Gotham is not back until April. I think we've got a couple. I don't know if all of the shows are back next week or not. I know we've got a new episode of Supergirl. We'll see about the rest of them. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. I want to thank the rest of the panel of experts here. Jeff Hackworth.
Thank you, and good night.
And Thomas Townley.
Good night, good night.
And I'm Jason Hunt. On behalf of all of us here at Sci-Fi for Me, thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, if you're on iTunes, rate and share. And if you're on any app and we disappear, you can always find the latest episodes over at scififorme.com. And we will be back with another episode of the Rogues Gallery next week.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2017 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.